Today is August the 2nd, Thursday. This is Kathy bringing you news from the Vermilion County area, starting with the commercial news for today. The headline reads, A Teacher in Taiwan. Traveler learns lessons for her own classroom by Mary Wyckoff. The experience of working with school children in Taiwan this summer will help Holly Hugstadt as she tackles her first teaching job. Hugstadt, a 2013 graduate of Schlarman High School, spent 4 weeks working and studying at University of Taipei's Lab School. She and six other students from Illinois State University observed and taught students in English classes in the mornings and took classes in culture and language in the afternoons. The study abroad program was led by one of her professors, Miranda Lin, who is from Taiwan. Hugstadt earned scholarships to pay for the trip. Hugstadt, 23, graduated in 2015 from the Danville Area Community College and this past May from ISU with a degree in math education. She will teach math this fall at Danville High School. She is the daughter of Dennis and Bobby Hugstadt of Danville. Hugstadt learned valuable lessons that she expects to carry over to her own classes. For one thing, she said, I learned how to interact with students of different backgrounds and how to read situations. The youngest students didn't know English, and she had to communicate through body language. The high school students were fluent in English, Mandarin, Chinese, the official language, and Taiwanese. I learned how to be clear and specific, she said. I couldn't assume they knew what I meant. It also occurred to her that math is a language she's fluent in, but many students don't speak that language. Thus, just like in a foreign tongue, she needs to find ways to get those messages across to others who aren't so fluent. The overall experience of traveling, especially to Asia, gives people a different perspective, she said, and she highly recommends it to others. In 2012, Hugstadt traveled with Schlarman classmates to England, Ireland, and Scotland. One of the big differences she noticed is that students go to school all day. They start their regular day at 8 or 9 a.m. and leave at 4 or 5 p.m. instead of going home. However, they go to cram schools until 9 p.m. or so. There, they learn new material so they can get ahead in their studies. Meals are served at the schools. The students also have 15-minute breaks between classes, and time is set aside for naps. There are no janitors, however, so the students clean the schools. Some days, the college students visited tribal or rural schools. At one elementary school, she worked in a garden while wearing a traditional farmer's hat. The parents work long days, too, so they cherish weekends. Hugstadt and one of her classmates, Guadalupe Hernandez, stayed with a family. Troy, a computer engineer, and Rita, a teacher. Huang and their 5-year-old daughter, Alva, in Taipei. Everyone lives in tall apartment buildings, she said, and her family lived on the 4th floor with no elevator. Some places have air conditioning, but the units are set to 80. The family ate out almost every night and took Hugstadt and Hernandez sightseeing on weekends. They visited memorial halls, went hiking in the mountains, shopped at night markets, and visited a lot of temples. The transit system was very easy to use, she said, and she went out on her own as she became more comfortable. There were strict rules, however, such as no talking on your phone and no food or drink. If young people were too noisy, the older ones would shush them. One thing that impressed Hugstadt was how neat and tidy everything was. The Taiwanese are big recyclers and tend to pick up litter on the street. She was also impressed with people's friendliness. Even if they didn't speak English, they'd try to help us, she said. If you even looked like you were struggling, people would try to help you. She also remarked on the heat. It was hot and humid, often in the mid to high 90s. As soon as you go outside, you start sweating, she said. She learned to make her own bug spray. The food was a challenge, too, as she tried new things, and the water for drinking had to be boiled. She liked the food and even learned how to make dumplings and master chopsticks. She learned how to pick tea leaves and then make her own tea under the guidance of a tea master. She ate whole squid, shark, cuttlefish, mussels, oysters, clams, and others. And this from my picky child, her mother, Bobby, interjected. Bobby at first was nervous about her daughter going overseas, but she later agreed it would be a good opportunity for her. Hugstadt couldn't text or call, but she did Skype with her family and share messages on Facebook. That made me feel better, Bobby said. Actually, it was nice not having cell service, Huckstadt said, as people were more aware of their surroundings instead of hiding behind their phones. There was so much to see that Huckstadt felt like she only scratched the surface. She would like to return and see more sights and recommends the experience to others. And the second article, Board Names District Director, by Carol Rome. Jamie Pasquale, a 20-year-old employee of the Vermilion County Conservation District, was named as the district's new executive director Wednesday during a special Board of Trustees meeting. Pasquale replaces Ken Consis, who retired in March after 46 years with the Conservation District, including the last 26 years as its executive director. After a brief closed session to discuss Pasquale's pay, the Board of Trustees voted unanimously to set his salary at $62,500 retroactive to April 1st. Trustee Chuck Schroeder said the district received 36 applications after advertising the position in early June. A search committee was formed the beginning of July and interviewed a number of applicants. Three candidates were recommended at a July 18th board meeting, with the Board of Trustees making the final hiring decision. Pasquale, a Georgetown native who now lives in rural Danville, started working full-time for the Conservation District in January of 1998 after working two summers at Lake Vermilion Park as a seasonal worker. He became the Associate Director of Operations in 2001 and continued being an Associate Director when the position changed in 2011. He has served as Interim Executive Director of the Conservation District since mid-March. Pasquale said he didn't have any immediate changes planned for the Conservation District, but would continue to focus on projects such as the Education Center and the Kickapoo Rail Trail that are in the works. "We're going to take things slow," he said. "We want community input because we work for them." At the Board of Trustees' next regular meeting, Pasquale anticipates appointing trustees to serve on a feasibility study committee to take a look at the next phases of the Education Center project. He said a feasibility study was never made for the center. Although phase one of the project is complete, phases two and three call for transforming the current classrooms into a large kitchen, creating new classrooms, and building a conference center facility with capacity for 300 people. "Our board has changed in recent years with three new board members," he said, explaining why it's important to revisit the project and develop a plan for its future direction. Pasquale said another big project for the Conservation District this year is the Kickapoo Rail Trail. "Work is underway on the St. Joseph to Ogden portion of the multi-use trail that runs parallel to U.S. Route 150. We will pick it up from the county line," he said, "but there will be construction this year on the portion from Oakwood to Gray's Siding." In other business, the trustees voted unanimously to split the associate director post into two positions again. The Associate Director of Administration will focus on the district's finances, whereas the Associate Director of Operations will focus on programs. Internal promotions at the Conservation District will fill the two reinstated positions. This headline reads, Convenient Care Plus Expands Services, by Mary Wyckoff. If you have a medical issue, but it's not an emergency, you can find help at the new Convenient Care Plus at Carl Danville on Fairchild. The service, which was launched this week, is staffed with full-time physicians and advanced practice providers who receive additional training to provide more advanced diagnostics and care. Carl Mattoon on Hearst also added the service. "People are urged to use this service instead of the emergency room, which is more expensive. The average emergency room visit costs $1,917. However, people are often confused as to what constitutes an emergency." The Carl website has a list of symptoms that can be treated at convenient care and another list of symptoms that require care in an emergency room. "See us for things that need attention now, but it's not possible to get into your regular doctor. Things like simple cuts and falls, urinary tract infections, minor burns, fever, or injuries requiring x-rays like sprains and strains," said Dr. Thomas Vegas, a physician at the Carl Danville Convenient Care. "Patients can seek the right care by asking a few questions. Is it life-threatening? Is it limb-threatening? Is help needed right now? If patients answer yes to any of those questions, they need to call 911 immediately. It's important to keep emergency departments clear for the most severe cases, such as heart attacks," Vegas said, "and to take the strain off of the ER. Also, he said the change is more convenient for patients as there are extended hours, a shorter wait time, quicker communication with physicians and other medical personnel, and more access to specialized equipment and labs. In addition, it's less expensive. It's not always easy to know if you should go to the emergency room, especially when you need to act fast, Dr. Ayala Stila with Mattoon on Hearst said in a press release. Trust your gut. If you're asking, should I be going, you should go. Listilla added, patients are still coming to the emergency department for needs that can be met elsewhere. Sometimes there's a misunderstanding of what services are available, and families just don't know there are other options. Amy Lee, vice president with Champaign-Urbana Primary Care and Medical and Pediatric Specialties, said in a press release, Carl continually evolves services to meet the needs and expectations of parents. This expansion allows for more services without additional cost to the patient. Convenient Care Plus provides advanced imaging like CT scans and MRIs, as well as advanced lab testing. It connects with a host of services and specialists and typically costs significantly less than an emergency room visit. Convenient Care and Convenient Care Plus facilities treat the most serious cases first, and most patients are seen within an hour. In this article from the News Gazette, facility returning to its roots from Freight Car America, rail car manufacturer bought out for future repair service site by Tracy Crane. A rail car manufacturing facility on Danville's east side that has struggled in recent years will return to its roots as a repair facility when the Andersons Incorporated completes its $2.2 million purchase of it later this month. The Ohio-based agribusiness company announced Wednesday that it signed an agreement to buy the Freight Car America facility and incorporate it into its Andersons Rail Group division. The announcement said Andersons Rail Group plans to provide a wide range of services at the site, including rail car repair, painting, blasting, cleaning, and scrapping and tank car certification. It said the Danville facility, which is strategically located in the high-volume Midwest rail transportation corridor, will be Andersons Rail Group's 21st shop in the United States. We are excited to add the Danville facility to our repair network, said Sam Anderson, vice president of operations with Andersons Rail Group. The purchase helps support our strategy of providing quality repairs and outstanding service to rail shippers, railroads, and rail car leasing companies across the U.S. The company expects the purchase to be finalized later this month and anticipates that the Danville location to be operational in the fourth quarter of this year. In its second quarter earnings report released Wednesday, Freight Car America said it has entered into a definitive agreement to sell the Danville, Illinois production facility for $2.2 million. It also reported a net loss of $2.3 million and a backlog of 2,319 rail cars with a total value of about $190 million. In the report, Freight Car America President and CEO Jim Meyer said the company's marketplace remains extremely challenging with continued pressures on pricing, but added that it has made progress on its back-to-basics operational improvement strategy and is ahead of schedule on its previously announced plan to reduce its cost of goods sold by $3,000 to $4,000 per rail car by the end of the year. The company has been expanding rail car production operations at other facilities, including Virginia and Alabama. Freight Car America is headquartered in Chicago and manufactures aluminum-bodied rail cars. It has been manufacturing rail cars since 1901, around the same time the Danville plant was established as the main shop for the Chicago and Eastern Illinois Railroad. Freight Car acquired the facility in 1995 and grew the repair facility into a major manufacturer of new railroad freight cars. And then they inserted a Freight Car Danville timeline. In 1995, Freight Car America, then called Johnstown America, adds to its rail car manufacturing capabilities by acquiring Freight Car Services in Danville. In 2005, Freight Car goes public, listing its common stock on the NASDAQ National Market, and also celebrates the grand opening of a rail car manufacturing facility in Roanoke, Virginia. In 2006, the company celebrated the completion of its 100,000th aluminum-bodied rail car with a ceremony at its Danville facility where the car was built. In February 2013, the company announced the sublease of a portion of a facility in Cherokee, Alabama, for a manufacturing facility and started operations there later that year. The facility has the capacity to build more than 7,000 rail cars per year. In December of 2014, FreightCar announced a $10 million capacity expansion of the Cherokee facility, adding an additional production line and increasing its total investment there to about $33 million. On August 1, 2018, yesterday, the Andersons Incorporated announced it has signed an agreement with FreightCar America to buy the Danville facility. The Andersons Rail Group plans to turn the former manufacturing plant into a full-service freight and tank car repair shop. And now turning to the obituaries for today. Nancy M. Hines. Nancy Marie Hines, 71, of Armstrong, passed away at 8:39 p.m. Tuesday, July 31st at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of Nancy Hines' life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 4th, at Blurton Funeral Home in Potomac, with Pastor Ted Rohde officiating. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday at the funeral home. She will be laid to rest in Embury Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Brandon Umbarger Memorial or the No. 10 Church. The family has entrusted the Blurton Funeral Home to assist them in honoring Nancy's life. Lois Louise Hill. Lois Louise Franchino Hill, 90, of Westville, passed away at 8:47 a.m. Tuesday, July 31st at the Hawthorne Inn, Danville, Illinois. A celebration of Lois's life will be at 2 p.m. Thursday, August 2nd at Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel, 414 South State Street in Westville, with Pastor James Blue officiating. Visitation will be 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Thursday prior to her service at the funeral home. She will be laid to rest in the Georgetown Cemetery. Memorial donations may be given in her name to the American Cancer Society. Luann Deutzman. Luann Deutzman, 63, of Danville, passed away Monday, July 30th at her home. A celebration of life will be 4 to 6 p.m. Friday, August 3rd at Pape Family Funeral Home, 10 East Williams Street in Danville. Rupert Anthony Elligood. Rupert Anthony Elligood, 87, of Sullivan, formerly of Hoopston, passed away Wednesday, August 1st, at Mason's Point in Sullivan. Graveside services for Rupert Elligood will be at 2:30 p.m. Friday, August 3rd, at Floral Hill Cemetery, with Father Tom Gibson officiating. Military honors will be conducted at the cemetery by the Hoopston American Legion Post No. 384. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Friday at Blurton Funeral Home in Hoopston. Masonic services will be held at 2 p.m. at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the donor's choice. Dan's clinch playoff spot by Marvin Holman. With the strong offensive showing on Wednesday, the Danville Dans clinched a spot in the Prospect League playoffs. Going into the game with the Lafayette Aviators, the Dans' magic number to reach the playoffs was 1, with games against the West Division leading Terre Haute Rex coming ahead for Friday. But with a big sixth inning with 7 runs, the Dans were able to beat the Aviators 10-3. I'm glad we were able to do it ourselves and not have other people decide it, Dans manager Eric Coleman said. We were able to come out with a 7-run inning, and any time you could do that, Lafayette took the lead in the first inning on an RBI double by Cam Smith, and starting pitcher Connor Schultz was keeping the Dans at bay. After giving up a leadoff single to Zach Huffins to start the sixth, Schultz was able to get 2 outs. Then the floodgates opened. Ben Bianco got a walk, and Huffins went to third on a wild pitch. Mateo Zunica hit a single to score Huffins to tie the game. New Lafayette pitcher Ty Lautenschlager was welcomed by Drew Bianco, who hit a 3-run shot to score Zunica and Ben Bianco. Matt Gammon and Trevor Minder each had singles after the homer, and then the Dans' power struck again when Kobe Kato hit a 3-run home run of his own for a 7-1 lead. Damian Pierce hit a double in the 7th inning, and Ben Bianco drove him in with a 2-run home run for a 9-1 lead. Lafayette scored 2 runs at the bottom of the 7th, but Danville added a final run in the 8th when Minder scored on an error. Good teams find a way to win, and after the big winning we had, we were able to get some more runs and put the pressure on their defense, Coleman said. Huffins also stole a base in the game, giving him 41, which tied the Prospect League single-season record for steals. Andrew Hansen got the win for the Dans, going 6 1/3 innings with 4 strikeouts, while Blake Schalecki went 2 2/3 innings with 2 strikeouts. Andrew pitched well, and Blake came in and did a great job as well, Coleman said. Pitching has been a great key to our season, and we hope it can continue. With the top 2 teams in the division going to the playoffs, the Dans games with the Rex is a preview of the upcoming West Division playoff, but can also be a chance for Danville to be West Division champion as they are 1.5 games back. It's a great rivalry, and we have great respect for them, Coleman said. We are pleased to be back in the playoffs, and we are going to go out and play hard. And this is from the Dear Anne. Boyfriend invites her to visit and then spends time with another. Dear Annie, I am an attractive, well-educated, mature woman. A year ago, an old boyfriend contacted me. We rekindled our romance and have a long-distance relationship. We have spent several weeks together on 3 different vacations. He insisted that I visit him. He bought me a plane ticket and made reservations for me to spend 6 weeks at his home. One of his female quote-unquote friends called several times a day, constantly interrupting our intimacy. He called her affectionate names and took the calls privately. She insisted on being included in all of our plans, controlling and domineering our time together, and insisted on driving us to bars and restaurants. He ignored my objections to this constant inclusion. When she drove us to one bar, she announced, "If anyone gets mad tonight, you're walking home." Obviously, she had hopes of upsetting me. While we were at the bar, my boyfriend totally ignored me. He turned his back to me and sat knee to knee with this woman. They held hands and lovingly gazed into each other's eyes, cooing affectionately about what they had been through together. I sat there, humiliated and hurting, saying nothing, trying to ignore them. The next day, I told him how disrespected and hurt this made me feel. He brushed it off and offered no apology to me. I told him I did not want to see this woman anymore. However, she invited herself to breakfast with us and showed up at his door, and we had to ride with her again. When I objected, he told me that if we ever broke up, it would be my fault because I can't get along with his friends. Also, when I asked him whether he and this woman have sex, he defended her and did not answer my question. At breakfast, again, they sat there ignoring me and staring lovingly at each other, and he said to her, "It's been a long time since you've been in my hot tub." I sat there like a fool, helplessly fighting back the tears, trying to maintain a shred of dignity. Even though he insisted that I visit him, bought my plane ticket, and says he loves me, he obviously could care less about my feelings. I was 2,000 miles from home in a huge, unfamiliar city with no one to call and nowhere to go. Please tell me what I should have done in that situation. Totally disrespected. Dear Totally Disrespected, you should have gotten on an earlier flight home and mailed this card and invoice for the rebooking fee. And mailed this CAD an invoice for the rebooking fee. Really, CAD doesn't even begin to cover it. He flew you across the country to visit him only so you'd have a front row seat for his dalliances with another woman. Something is definitely up between them, and they both seem to relish the drama, almost as if it's some kind of sick game to them. You deserve to be with someone who treats you with respect. There are plenty of fish in the sea. Toss this eel back and cast your line anew. And this next one is a political opinion by Catherine Rampell. She writes a column. It says, a winning theme for Democrats? Kids. Democrats have been casting about for a winning theme this November. Here's one suggestion. Kids. After all, despite once declaring themselves the party of family values, Republican politicians have more recently ceded this territory. The GOP is now the party of state-sanctioned child abuse, of taking health care away from poor children, of leaving young immigrant dreamers in legal limbo. It is GOP policy and GOP policy alone that has ripped thousands of immigrant children from their parents and locked them in cages where they cannot be held or comforted when they cry. It is these policies that have caused young children to not recognize their own parents when finally reunited through a federal court order, or to enraging cases like one The Nation reported last week about a 6-year-old girl who was separated from her mother and then sexually abused multiple times in an immigrant detention center. When it comes to callousness toward the young and the vulnerable, Washington Republicans have also found other ways to put their money where their mouth is. For 114 days, Republican lawmakers let lapse federal funding for the Children's Health Insurance Program, which 9 million low- and moderate-income children depend on, while the party instead pursued tax cuts for the wealthy. Last year, it likewise tried but failed to axe funding for Medicaid, which another 37 million poor children relied on for care in 2017. Under current law, only 9% of the federal budget is spent on children, through programs such as Medicaid and special education. That share is projected to fall over the next decade as the country ages and spends more money on other priorities, according to a new report from the Urban Institute. And if President Trump has his way, he would snatch more money away from the children. His administration's 2019 budget slashes funding for children's programs almost across the board. Relative to spending under current law, for instance, he would cut child care assistance and Head Start funding by about 30% each. And last week, we learned the administration is killing two separate rules that would help prevent students from being scammed by for-profit programs offering useless degrees. Meanwhile, instead of helping young people gain skills that will be useful in our increasingly high-tech and service-driven economy, Trump fixates on reviving jobs in dying industries such as coal. There's a theme here. Trump and his partisans care mostly about indulging constituencies of the past, which gives Democrats an opening to fight for the future, starting with proposals focused on children. And I don't mean only the obvious proposals like don't rip babies from their mother's breasts. There are lots of popular, ambitious ideas that could improve children's well-being and pay dividends in an economy that requires turning today's children into tomorrow's healthy, productive, tax-paying adults. Such proposals, including expanding access to high-quality early childhood education, a cost-effective strategy for reducing future criminal justice system costs and other social spending, or offering parents paid leave, which is supposedly a priority of the Trump administration, although, aside from a recent Senate hearing, much has not gotten traction. Or expanding parents' access to Medicaid, which has been shown to improve health outcomes for their children. These are all objectives that are not only important to the women and millennials who increasingly dominate the Democratic base. Policies such as paid family leave and early childhood education have broad bipartisan appeal too, because, hey, it's not exactly controversial to be pro-child. So why aren't pro-child policies already the centerpiece of either party's platform instead of far down on the list of political promises? One argument against putting kids front and center is that your off-year elections tend to draw an older electorate. The Americans who show up to vote are less likely to have minor children and thus may support, but are less personally and motivated by, say, impassioned pleas about preschool. But Democratic pollsters I spoke with, such as Lake Research's Celinda Lake, said seniors are nonetheless more concerned about children today than they ever have been during past election cycles. And it is not only because children feature prominently in many of today's hot-button issues, such as immigration and gun violence. Children are also a useful metaphor for where the country is headed. There's policy and there's values, and this is about setting up values debate with Republicans, Anna Greenberg of the research firm Greenberg Quinlan Rosner tells me. Values means who you are and what you're for. And so far, Republicans have shown us they're for putting children in cages. And that was written by Catherine Rampell. Well, that's about all we have time for today. I hope you enjoyed the readings today from the Commercial News and the News Gazette. For those of you who live in Vermilion County, this is Kathy wishing you a great day.